You know my name, it stayed the same. We both grew up here in this town. I know you, you know me. How can you sit there at your desk looking at me like I'm some stranger begging for change? I ain't to blame. No, it ain't the rain. It's the powers that be telling me to feel ashamed.
The song Hard Times carried one of the most powerful documentaries ever done at Iowa Public Television, a look at the 1980s farm crisis.
It changed rural America forever. The jobs disappeared. The main street businesses closed. And the young people had to go to a city somewhere else to get a job. And so that farm crisis completely altered the fabric of rural America.
Laurel Bauer Bergmeier was the producer of the look at how life changed in that decade and garnered national attention, including from a network TV reporter, Harry Smith.
Grassroots activists chanted, "No sale." Politicians marched alongside struggling farmers, hoping to change government policies.
The now NBC correspondent answered Bauer's call to narrate the film. His story is in this installment of the M2M. I'm Paul Yeager. Today, When Harry Met Laurel.
Hi, I'm Laurel Bauer Bergmeier from Iowa Public Television. I used to work on Market to Market, and one of the highlights of my career so far was producing the farm crisis for Iowa Public Television.
So that was years ago. You'd think you'd be done talking about that.
Yeah, but it's one of those projects that you never stop talking about.
We've discussed this before. We've had you in, and we did an entire podcast, which
right.
will be linked when we see this. And it's a topic that people talk about today, and I'm sure once they know, people that know you and you did what you did, they ask you, hey, about that. But if they don't know, they're curious, and I say, well, this is the gal that produced The Farm Crisis. Oh, well, we watched that one with our family and things like that. Do you still hear that?
Yeah, I do. And I've all especially heard from an educational standpoint. I know for Market to Market, mm-hmm. you guys continue to be used in the classrooms, and a lot of people are using that documentary because it's such an important part of our American history and Iowa history. So
you know
we do.
You know who I told that story to that people still are curious about it?
Who's that?
Harry Smith.
Wow,
If I say Harry Smith to you, what first comes to your mind?
Well, that he was the narrator for the documentary.
And for other people who might go, Harry Smith, that sounds familiar. Formerly of CBS
yes.
News, now with NBC News. And at the time that you contacted him, he was kind of like in a transition phase of his career and his life.
Definitely, he was. And so I think that may have helped. We caught him at a great time. But his name was the first one when I was thinking of narrators for the Farm Crisis documentary, because I remember as a young girl going through the farm crisis with my family and seeing him on TV, seeing him come to Iowa and report on the times. And so he was just always in my memory. And I just thought, what the heck, you know, why not try? So I was able to track down his number. And I think I actually contacted him through email, and he called me and said he was interested. And it kind of snowballed from there. So
in a minute, we're going to listen to a conversation I had with Harry Smith, and I'll set it up here in just a little bit. I asked him, you know, what was it like when you see this communication from Iowa, and why did you pick up the phone, or why did you say yes? Was he your first choice?
He was my first choice because of remembering him. And I've always really respected his work. I actually didn't know at the time when I called him that he was in a transition from CBS to NBC. But he's just one of those guys. I love his voice. I like the way he tells a story. He seems very caring, very bright. But I thought that maybe because he had reported so much during the 80s that he might feel a connection to it.
Well, and that's actually what I asked him. I go, why did you say yes? And he says, well, I went to South Dakota, to Kansas, to Iowa, and I saw the pain and I saw the problems that had been going on, and I felt a connection to it. And he felt such a strong connection, he only had one demand.
He really wanted to help with the script, which I was honored that he even asked. Usually when you have a script, of course, you'll go over it with a narrator, the person narrating, but they usually just do a recording for you with maybe a few changes. Mm-hmm. But he requested that to look at the script at the stage that it was at that point, and to offer suggestions or things that maybe I hadn't thought of. And I was happy to do so. He was extremely helpful on it. He loved the script immediately, which felt good that he liked the script, but then he made some terrific changes based on his experience with that time.
Was he making major editorial changes?
No, or? No. It was more like maybe how I said something or a word here and there, but he did not make any editorial changes. He was really pleased with the script itself, and I think that influenced him to continue to want to be a part of it. But he really just added little things, little phrases or things that he felt audiences might relate to more. And based on him telling stories for many more years than me, I trusted him.
John Nichols was senior producer
yes.
on that project.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have to tell John, Harry Smith says yes, but how did John take that news?
You know, I actually don't really remember. I know John was thrilled that that Harry Smith wanted to do it, the whole station was. But I think he was open to it because he knew that we were going to stand by the editorial aspect of it and keep that content the way we wanted it. I think it was more like, let's see what he says, and he had some nice changes, yeah.
But your relationship where you talked and pitched and he writes, and did he record it remotely, right?
Yes, he recorded it from New York.
So then you're on the phone while he's recording it, or did you just say, okay, let us know how it turns out? Are you on the phone?
No, we were on the phone with him. That's the way we wanted to do it, and because we may have even, I don't remember, but we may have made little minor changes at the time, but we were on the phone with him. Jim Lazier, our audio engineer here, helped me, and it was really slick. It worked well.
So he's remotely somewhere recording, and you're talking. And is that standard for documentaries, how the narration
happens?
Pretty much.
A lot of times they'll come in with the George Washington Carver documentary that I produced 2 years ago. The narrator was in Atlanta, Georgia, and so we did it the same way. Yeah.
Okay. And once he sends the narration, the audio file, you're like, okay, it's done. But it's not. He
right.
kept involved. Did you openly invite him to the premiere, or did he just say, is there a premiere? I'd like to come.
You know, it wasn't even really an open invitation. It was more like we kept in touch, and he kind of would check in, wanted to know how the project was going. He also, another part that he was involved in a little bit was the song that was, Chad Elliott, an Iowa musician, composed the music for it, and he did it beautifully. But there was one song that was kind of our theme for the project, that Harry heard it, loved it, and said, would he be offended if I suggested the change of words in like one little part? And I asked Chad, and Chad was the same as me. You know, he remembered Harry Smith. We're about the same age. And he was like, no, let me hear it, you know, and see what I think. And he said it was perfect. And so Harry was a part of that, too. And I think he really appreciated that we were open to having him a part of the process. I mean, of course, he wasn't like, you know, every moment, but a part of the process, because I'm sure people asking to have him narrate or hear his name, it's like, here's our script, record it. And I think he enjoyed this because he had memories of reporting that event.
Yeah, and that's something that you're going to hear in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Harry Smith was the keynote speaker at the Iowa Broadcast News Association back in April of 2019. And I just took a chance and said, hey, I work with Laurel. You did the Farm Crisis Doc. Any chance I could just chat with you? And he was like, yeah, how's she doing? You know, and he was very approachable and friendly, and he did another interview with somebody else. And he was very engaged with the people from Central College where he had come to school. And then when he spoke that night, he took questions. Do you still follow his career?
I haven't. Well, I still follow his career. We stayed in touch. I remember kind of back to the premiere a little bit. We had talked about us having a premiere, and the day before the night it was going to premiere, he emails me or calls me. I think it was a call. Hey, I'm coming. And I thought it was a joke. And I said, really? And so he, and, you know, here we are at the State Historical Society of Iowa ready for our premiere. And here walks in Harry Smith, flew in from New York, basically flew out the next morning. So that was just a really fun surprise. We've stayed in touch here and there a little bit. He sent me even a book of poetry kind of with about rural America, and wrote me one of the nicest letters I've ever received from a person that I've worked with about the documentary. He wrote it from the airport the next morning, and it and I've kept it. And so, but he is, like you saw, he loves the people that he connects with. And so I follow his career, watching what he's doing, and I love to always hear mm-hmm. stories.
So really only 24 hours notice is all you had that
yeah.
he was coming?
Like I said, I really thought he was joking.
And I think I'll post a picture, because I'm pretty sure I still have it on my phone, the two of you standing on stage from that night.
Oh, sure,
and
yeah.
And maybe somebody else has that image that I can get. Connection to people. So the Central College president introduces him. He was not the president, nor was at Central College when
right.
Harry Smith was there. That was back in the late 60s, early 70s. The introduction that the president gave was a year in review of Harry's 2018 stories. Mm. And it was maybe 3 minutes, maybe five. And it just goes from I'm here and he was here and I'm talking to this one. And all of a sudden, ladies and gentlemen, Harry Smith. And he comes up. Harry Smith is crying because he was just like, what a lucky job I have. What a year. Gosh, I can't believe I get to meet all those great people.
Yeah.
It's his own work. He goes, I'd never seen that. Or it'd been a while. I mean, it was April, so it was 4 months. And you don't always watch your final product.
Right.
Because I'm
yeah.
guessing he's not there on Sunday morning when they run his stuff. They tape it whenever during the week. And he was moved by that. So I think that's always – you found either your work through Market to Market or mm-hmm. you're talking with people. You find that you can tell when someone is genuine with you.
Yes.
Right?
Definitely. Oh, yeah, definitely. And I feel that he, you know, and that we do move people, that we affect their lives. And but no, he's a very genuine person. He reacted that way. He was emotional when he got up to speak after he saw the documentary, because, of course, he hadn't seen any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the main reasons he wanted to be there, was he wanted to see it with the first time it was shown.
And it's different experience. I've critiqued senior students, and I said, hey, you know, just think about this. You heard when people laughed at your line or cried at you. You could see people cry. It's so different. It used to be when you started making documentaries, Laurel, or stories, mm-hmm. they watched it on television.
Oh, of course.
They watched it on the big screen. Now they're watching it on a small screen.
Yep.
Headphones in, buds in, on a train, on a bus, on a tractor, wherever,
right.
watching. So you have to figure – you have to make something that connects with people both small and
right.
large. And they're not always the same thing.
Yeah. No, that's very true. And that was a new experience for me with that premiere in that auditorium. A lot of people – the musician was there, Chad Elliott, of course, Harry Smith, you know, all the Iowa Public Television people that helped on the project, worked on the project, and then many of the people that were in it. So that was very different, hearing them laugh and hearing tears, you know, cries and – or not crying out loud,
no.
but very emotional.
It was emotional because mm-hmm. all of a sudden Mark Pearson shows up on
right.
screen.
Right, yeah.
You know, and
exactly.
that was, it turns out his final interview was,
right.
was yours.
That's
with him.
Right. Yeah. So that was emotional, too.
Yeah, it caught a lot of people.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for discussing this. I know it was several years ago, but I just thought you're going to be interested. Hopefully, I think people will be interested to hear from Harry Smith. Laurel,
yeah.
thank you.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm excited to hear him.
And let's do that now. Harry Smith, comments made in a discussion here on the MTM podcast. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to the other side when we get done with Harry in just a little bit. Are rural Americans different? Are rural Kentucky people different than people in Iowa or Idaho or Montana, as you just were talking about?
Well, their points of reference are certainly different, right? What their day-to-day lives are like. I think especially here now, the folks in rural Iowa, you know, they don't have the communities they used to have.
Mm-hmm.
Some places back east, or some places, you know, farther out west. The depopulation in Montana happened decades and decades and decades ago. This is still pretty fresh here. I was just up in northwest Iowa a couple of weeks ago and just took farm-to-market roads all the way back into Des Moines, you know, turned the GPS off.
Yeah.
And I'd done a similar drive about 2 years ago, and there's no one out there anymore.
Right.
It's stunning compared to when I first started coming out here in the 1960s. It's a different, completely different landscape. So, yeah, I think rural area by rural area, they are really, really different, right? And you just go 100 miles south of here, and the landscape mm-hmm. is completely different in Missouri, right?
It is.
And then move over to Arkansas, and that's a completely different landscape. So landscape ends up forming communities in different ways. Your way of life changes because of whatever you're surrounded by. And what kind of commerce you end up being involved in. So I think there is a lot of – and as different ethnicities planted themselves mm-hmm. in all these different places, what their traditions are, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd say, yeah, they're really, really different.
You don't spend a ton of time on farms, but are farmers different in those areas?
That's a good question. And it – boy, everyone you meet is a little bit different, I think. And sometimes you're surprised at how progressive some are, and you may be surprised at how just sort of, that you meet some guys who just feel like this is my job. Mm-hmm. I got to plant fence row to fence row. This is, I'm leasing this land. I've just got to do what I've got to do. And maybe those folks say there is a better way or a different way, but that's the way I've always done it, and I'm going to continue to do it. And then there are others who say, it's incumbent upon me to make this land better. That whole idea that I think we would like to believe about agriculture of, leaving the land in a better spot, in a better condition mm-hmm. it was than maybe our great-grandfather when he first busted this sod out here. So, yeah, every person is different. And people are in different, I think, you find people in evolution, right? That they may have not been paying much attention to some of the issues that agriculture has been faced with, and then they read a little bit more, or talk to a neighbor, or, the next thing their attitudes change. But what I'm talking about.
I do, and talking to farmers is fun for me. I mean, it's hard to believe that I get to do it a lot.
Right.
And I always try to tell them, you're the same but different,
right?
Just kind of what you're saying. You get a phone call a few years ago from someone from Iowa Public Television
right.
asking you to be a part of a project.
Right.
Terrible thing, the farm crisis of the 80s. We still remember it. We talk about it. Are we heading back into mm-hmm. one? When you get a call like that, what was your first reaction?
Oh, boy. I'm serious. It came right at a time that I had gone to NBC to start a magazine show with Brian Williams, and they were just about to pull the plug on the thing. And I got this phone call, and it was, would you narrate this documentary on the farm crisis? And I said, well, let me ask you some questions first, because I had covered the story here and in Kansas and in South Dakota and in Colorado, and I had very, very, very fresh memories of what the experience was like. And so, to a small degree, I became a collaborator on it. So maybe a little more than a small degree,
yeah.
But it was a blast. It was a really – and I felt like the storytelling that was done on that show, I got such great feedback from folks as they saw it or as if it was repeated. They said, it felt real. It felt authentic.
Well, I remember the premiere at the Iowa Historical Building. You came back for that. I know Laurel, we still give Laurel a hard time about, your buddy Harry Smith's coming to Iowa. Do you guys exchange Christmas cards? But it's relationships. You talked about it in a panel earlier today, people feeling comfortable with you.
That story, I got like an email from her. And I wrote her back and I said, well, let's talk. And then I listened to what work she had already done and made a suggestion here and there. And the next thing you know, we were actually in a conversation. So that's, and I think, for me, honestly, having spent, I went to work on a truck farm, which is very different from any kind of agriculture that's done here. But, you know, I've stood in the manure pile, right? I know how the door on the outhouse swings, which nobody can relate to anymore.
Not here.
Right?
No.
Right? In any way, shape, or form, because I'm that old also. But I've just, you know, I have an affinity for agriculture, and I learned to drive a tractor, and I've learned to drive a pickup before I learned to drive a car. So I've got some of that in me, I guess.
So the farm crisis story to you was an important one to tell?
Yeah, oh my gosh. Well, you know, it was such stark history, and you look at so many of the people who were involved were really second and third generation farmers here. And, you know, the government had sent them a message and said, yeah, go get as big as you can, because we can sell all the grain you produce. And people felt betrayed. People felt betrayed, and they were ashamed, because this was the legacy of pioneers who were their forebears who came out here to start farming. And boy, that the pressure on those folks was unbelievable, just unbelievable. And they ended up in this situation, you know, in many cases for no fault of their own.
What do you remember from going to South Dakota and to Kansas and Iowa in the middle of the 80s?
The sorrow. Just absolute unbelievable sorrow. It was, you know, these people, they assumed they were going to be on the farm forever, and they were praying that one of their kids was going to, you know, continue on mm-hmm. too. I was thinking about this the other day as I was driving through. I came up through way out in southwestern Kansas just this week, and I drove through Kansas on the blue highways and mm-hmm. then back up this way. And remember, people very proudly used to put signs up in front of their farms, say Century Farms. Mm-hmm. You don't see that sign anymore because there are no farms left. So that was the beginning of really. Listen, you know, people say the beginning of the end for that old-fashioned agriculture was the beginning of mechanization, and that was a step, but that huge step was in the 1980s. That changed everything.
You're not an economist. You're not active in farming now, yeah. But I'm going to ask you to be active in farming
sure.
now. Do you see any of the same things coming now again?
I don't see. Listen, you. Here's what we know for sure. A fifth of farmers in the United States are operating at a deficit, almost a fifth. The numbers of defaults on loans is higher than it's been in a long, long time. Although just representationally, if that's a word, it's not like big neon headline type numbers, but it's up. It's up significantly. You know, you look, for instance, in different sectors. So you look at what's going on in Wisconsin. Dairy industry there is being decimated.
Right.
People don't, honestly, they're operating in a deficit every single day. And they also, they don't know what, they may own the land, they may own the farm. If they want to sell their animals, they'll sell at a loss. If they wanted to get out of the business, there's nobody to come in and scoop it up from them. And these are old Century Farm folks, right? They survived only to run into a marketplace that isn't friendly to them.
Just this week, a farmer in southern Minnesota posted a 6-minute video after he'd had an argument with his father. Mm-hmm. He goes out and just, he's about 24, under 25, and
right.
just lays out how difficult things are and how much stress everyone is under. And that's, the Star Tribune did a story on it. I don't know if that's an anecdote.
Right.
But I'm afraid, and I'm starting to see more and more stories like it. Do you see similar stories like that?
Well, there was a, through South Dakota and Nebraska, there were a number of stories that have been done over the last year or two about mental health. Mm-hmm. It ends up a huge issue in rural America, not only because of the financial pressure, but because of this depopulation. You know, if we think about the times off season, if you're not, well, because of mechanization, your springtime is shorter.
Right.
Your machines are bigger, so the machines do the work. You know, there are times when you're fallow, right? And if the coffee shop isn't in town, who do you talk to? Who do you just shoot the bull with to talk about? You know, but you know, you talk to your wife, you talk to your cousin who's farming 100 miles away. But when you lose that sense of community, because the communities die, I think it's a little harder to hang on to your purpose. It's a challenge. It's a real challenge for these folks.
Well, I appreciate your time here today and what you've done for those in rural America.
Yeah, grew up in a town that turned into a suburb, and everything north and east of us was people and factories, and everything out south and west was farms and forests. And it's kind of funny that I should end up knowing about and caring about agriculture so much.
Well, okay, you bring something up that I want to ask earlier. When you said to someone else today, you report west of the Hudson.
Right.
How do you tell people and Nash, your colleagues,
right,
hey, we have a joke about the Washington Post or the New York Times comes mm-hmm. out, and within 100 miles of a Starbucks is all the farther they'll go.
Right.
Is that an accurate depiction? And how
and
how do you break that stereotype?
The truth is, because of the online editions, there are people all over Iowa reading those papers. And when I lived in Denver, it used to get the Sunday Times used to be delivered on an airplane, and we would go to a bookstore at noon on Sunday to get our Times once it was delivered by an airplane. It's pretty interesting. A story I tell was, I was trying to take a day off a couple summers ago, and I get a call from the news desk, the nightly news desk, and the producer on the other end of the phone said, hey, we want you to go, have you heard of this thing where all these guys on motorcycles go to one town? And and I said, you mean Sturgis? And they said, yeah, we're just reading about this. That's kind of amazing. And I said, everybody knows about Sturgis. I said, you're the only ones who don't know about this. Everybody knows what this is. And they said, well, we want you to go anyway. So, you know, there are some significant cultural gaps mm-hmm. between a lot of the folks who produce our news and what's actually going on out here. Although it's interesting to me, those big newspapers like The Times and The Washington Post, they keep adding reporters all the time. They more and more, you know, did I read something about they may have more reporters now than at any point? Something like that.
Wow.
They're out there, right? And people want that journalism. And Lord knows we need, as people who are citizens, we need people, you know, we need people in those rooms. We need people out in rural America and all the nooks and crannies of the planet so we can have some first person reporting on what's going on. Mm-hmm. We don't have to rely on, you know, some troll in a basement someplace.
We'll leave the trolls for another comment. Thank you so much, Harry Smith.
Been my pleasure.
Hard times, hard times.
My thanks to Harry Smith and Laurel Bauer for their insight. And if you do want to go back and listen to that first discussion we had about the Farm Crisis documentary with Laurel, it is in the link on the webpage of this podcast. Send me an email, paul.yeager@iptv.org or markettomarket@iptv.org. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.
At your desk, I guess I'm the stranger here, begging for change.